So I thought I'd just start by reviewing for a few minutes what we talked about last time. So we wrote down the flat FRW metric, which has this function a of t in it. The function a of t is the scale factor of the universe and represents the level of expansion at time t, in the sense that in the rest frame of the universe, two co-moving observers who measure their physical separation we'll see it growing as 1 power of a of t, where the delta x in this equation is the coordinate or co-moving separation between the observers. Another definition that I'll write down, because I'll use it a lot, is the Hubble expansion rate, or our fractional expansion per unit time. That's a basic cosmological scale that occurs all over the place, just the amount of time you have to wait to see order one expansion. And it's pretty well measured. I like to put error bars on things just to emphasize that, generally speaking, in cosmology nowadays, quantities like H are measured to, say, 5% or better.
That's H0.
Oh, yes, thanks. Thank you. Right, H is a function of time. And H today is 1 over 14. I realized I forgot to say that when I put the subscript 0 on any quantity, it will mean today, or at scale factor a equal to 1. We were talking about geodesics, and which tells us how particles move in the FRW spacetime, either massive particles or massless. One thing that you can see without much calculation is that a massless particle moves along the light cone, which is defined by the equation dx over dt equals 1 over a. We went through integrating the geodesic equation, which is kind of a long calculation when you put everything together, like calculating the Christoffel symbols in this metric and so on. The geodesic equation could be integrated, and I'll write the solution down in a few equations. If I normalize the affine parameter of a geodesic so that the four velocity along the geodesic is the same thing as the covariant four momentum of the particle. One thing that's true is that this is just the squared, sorry, plus sign. This is the squared four momentum with the FRW metric, which allows you to identify Q0 with the physical energy of the particle. And the combination A Q upper I with the physically measured momentum, the momentum that a co-moving particle detector would measure in physical units. In view of this identity, it suffices to work out the time evolution of either Q0 or QI. And we did this for QI and found that QI goes as 1 over a squared, or equivalently, the physical Q goes as 1 over a. This scaling, I think, is most interesting for the in the case of a massless particle. I'll talk about that case. It applies to both. This simple formula applies to both the massless and massive cases. But for a massless particle, like a photon, the energy and the momentum are the same thing, and are the same thing as the frequency. And so what this scaling is telling you is that if you emit a photon and then measure it at a later time, that the observed frequency is scaling as 1 over a. So let me write that this way. I observed, which, or let me remind you that I observed is always going to be one. So that means that as we look out in the universe to earlier values of the scale factor A, we see the frequencies of photons shifted to lower values or shifted toward the red. And this is, of course, how the expansion of the universe is observed by seeing like things like spectral lines in galaxies redshifted. Just to introduce another definition, there's a sort of trying to, there's lots of auxiliary quantities I want to define, like h of t. The subject has a few more definitions that I think are logically necessary, because physicists like one set of variables and astronomers prefer a different set. So the astronomer's version of A is the redshift Z, which is just defined by A equals 1 over 1 plus Z. So physicists tend to use A and astronomers tend to use Z, but there's no real difference. Physicists would say this galaxy is at scale factor 0.2, and an astronomer would say that it's at redshift Z equals 4. So an astronomer would write this as would write the redshift factor as 1 over 1 plus Z, where I've set A observed to 1. Just to comment briefly on the case of the massive geodesic. All you need to know about the geodesic is contained in the statement that the physical momentum still goes as 1 over A in the massive case. If I write that as the physically measured velocity, put the m in, 1 minus g squared to the 1/2, then if you imagine that, imagine a massive particle which starts out relativistic, then what will happen is that its Lorentz factor, 1 over v squared, to, 1 minus 1 over v squared to the 1/2, redshifts with the expansion of the universe until the particle becomes non-relativistic, until the gamma factor becomes of order 1. And then once it becomes non-relativistic, the velocity starts to slow down as 1 over a. So the effect of the expansion of the universe is to try to bring particles, massive particles, into the rest frame of the universe. And this effect is called Hubble drag. Just the rest mass. Very massive. Massive particle with rest mass. We could go on to like integrate the equation of motion for the geodesic. Like if you wanted to integrate it on the computer, for example, then you could use the mass energy relation to find Q0 as a function of A, and then find the trajectory of the geodesic by integrating this equation. But I won't write those equations down. I just wanted to make the point that this relation determines the behavior of the geodesic, and the new physics in the expansion of the universe is this phenomenon of Hubble drag. Wants to drag massive particles into the FRW rest frame. So I'm, sort of exploring the FRW metric by just specializing the machinery of GR to this specific metric. And we did this for geodesics. And so the next thing that I want to specialize is Einstein's equations. That'll give us an equation of motion for A of t, which is very useful and interesting. In the spirit of last time, I want to just review some GR machinery. And we'll review curvature. And I like to review the GR machinery in more detail than is really necessary for the calculation that I'm trying to do. Just because I think part of the point of learning cosmology is just to practice doing GR calculations. And GR is just really generally useful in theoretical physics. I'll write down some definitions and identities involving curvature. Curvature arises. Let me start with the Riemann curvature tensor. Curvature arises when you commute covariant derivatives. So if you consider, for example, the commutator operating on a vector with one lowered index. Last time I commented that if when applied to a scalar function with no indices, these covariant derivatives do commute. That's called the torsion-free property of the covariant derivative. But if you apply to an object with one or more indices, you get a curvature term. And so if you put in the definition of the covariant derivative with the Christoffel symbols, and you would calculate some non-zero term on the right-hand side, where the Riemann curvature tensor is given by this formula. I'll write it down for completeness. And I wrote down this commutator on for the case of a tensor X with one lowered index. If you consider the case of a tensor with M lowered indices and N upper indices, then you get M plus N terms. For each lowered index, there's a term with a plus sign. You just have to remember the signs here. There's only one way to contract the indices. For the upper indices, there's a minus sign. And Riemann curvature tensor satisfies a lot of identities. Let me start with the algebraic identities. So there's a some index symmetry or anti-symmetry. It's anti-symmetric in the first two indices and also anti-symmetric in the last two indices. And finally, there's a really non-obvious, at least from the definition, really non-obvious symmetry where if you exchange the first two indices with the last two, that you the curvature tensor is symmetric under that operation. And finally, there's two more identities that look like the Jacobi identity. So there's one that says the Jacobi identity says that if I add three things together, cyclically permuting an index, I'm supposed to get zero. And that's true for the first three indices of the Riemann curvature tensor. I'm just writing those terms down with cyclic permutations. And then it's also true if I write the curvature tensor down with a covariant derivative. These are sometimes called the first and second Bianchi identity. Let me just mention for completeness that these identities both arise from the condition that Generally speaking, the Jacobi identity refers to, this sort of thing. If I this is something that's true for any three operators. If I consider their nested commutator and then add the same thing cyclically permuted twice, that I always get zero no matter what operators they put here. So if you specialize that general statement to the case where each of these operators is a covariant derivative with a different index, work out all the curvature terms that you get, then you get both of these identities. Okay, so that's all I have to say about Riemann curvature. And then there's also Ricci curvature, scalar curvature, and Einstein curvature, which I sort of think of as like calculational intermediates on the way to Einstein's equations. So there's Ricci curvature is defined this way. And in view of this, the first line of symmetries of the Riemann curvature tensor. This is the only unique way to like contract. Oh, I'm sorry, I meant to write rho sigma. About that. This is the unique way of contracting indices in the Riemann curvature tensor. If I chose a different pair of indices to contract, I would either get plus or minus the same thing. Then there's a, if I contract indices again, I get called scalar curvature. And then finally, the Einstein curvature is defined by, sort of think of this as like flipping the sign of the scalar curvature. And the significance of the Einstein curvature, of course, is that it appears in Einstein's equation. Relating the derivatives of the metric to the stress energy. Now, an interesting thing about the Einstein tensor with this magic coefficient of minus one half is that it's conserved in the sense that its covariant divergence is zero. And so that's something that's just true for any metric. It's just the consequence of how the Einstein tensor is defined. It's not an identity that's supposed to be obvious. It follows from this the second Bianchi identity for the curvature tensor and some calculation. One implication is that the stress energy tensor must be conserved in order to couple to the metric via Einstein's equation without mathematical inconsistency. If you tried to write down Einstein's equation for a stress energy that was not conserved in this sense, then you would just get a mathematically inconsistent set of equations, since you could take the divergence on both sides and get something, get zero on one side and something non-zero on the other. And this also has the consequence that even though Einstein's equations are 10 equations, both sides depend have two indices and are symmetric in mu and nu, the 10 equations are generally not independent of each other. By taking the divergence on both sides, you can get four equations of the form 0 equals 0. So there'll generally be four redundancies between 10 equations. Okay, so that's all I have to say in like my little mini review of curvature and Einstein's equation. Now I want to just specialize this machinery to the FRW metric. I'm gonna do this in two steps. One where I just kind of turn the crank and like calculate mechanically quantities, like work out both sides of Einstein's equations in the FRW metric, and I'll derive some interesting equations, and then I'll come back and interpret those equations physically. So let's start with some mechanical calculation. I want to start on the right-hand side of Einstein's equations and write down the stress-energy tensor. So this is just a definition, but I'm going to define the well, it's a definition, but there's also some non-trivial symmetry content, I suppose. So I'm going to define the stress-energy tensor of the FRW metric like this, where the energy density rho and the pressure P are defined by this equation. I apologize that my blackboard rows look a lot like my blackboard P's. Let me know if there's an ambiguity. With two upper indices, it would. This is the most general tensor, which is consistent with the symmetries of FRW, with the zeros here and the delta ij here, because of rotation symmetry. And with coefficients that depend on time but not space because of translation symmetry. The stress energy tensor must satisfy the same symmetries as the metric for the following reason. Because the Einstein tensor is derived from the metric, then it must be invariant under the FRW symmetries. And so by Einstein's equations, T mu nu must be it as well. So these are just definitions. I'm just saying that the stress energy tensor of an FRW metric can be parametrized by these two functions, rho and p. But there's one constraint that those functions will need to satisfy, and that is the constraint coming from the condition that the stress energy be conserved. So before I get to the left-hand side of Einstein's equations, I'm going to just work out what that constraint is. So that'll involve some Christoffelsons. So let me remind you that for the, just write down the FRW metric. The Christoffel symbols I calculated last time. I got, where's this guy with delta ij and guy with a squared h delta ij? These are the only non-zero Christoffel symbols. And so if I want to work this out, let me start by writing down the general definition of the covariant derivative of the stress energy before I do the index contraction. So by the definition of the covariant derivative, there would be this first term with the partial derivative, and then two Christoffel symbol terms with plus signs. As usual, this calculation will split into different cases depending on whether I take the free index nu to be a time index or a spatial index. Let me do half the calculation by calculating the piece where nu is the time index 0. In this step, I'm just taking this line and contracting these indices and specializing to the case rho equals 0. 0, 0. In the next step, In this line, the contracted index mu goes from 0 to 3. In the next step, I'll just figure out which of those contributions are 0 or non-zero. So in this term, I only get a non-zero contribution when the mu is a spatial index, since the gamma with three zeros is equal to 0. And then in this term, you only get, sorry, I have too many zeros here. Then in this term, I only get something non-zero when both indices are spatial. Now then this is the time derivative. The next line, I'm just mechanically plugging in stress energy components and Christoffel symbols. This is H delta II. Raise the blackboard a little bit just for visibility. H squared H J minus 2P delta IJ. This is rho dot. I get a 3 here from contracting this spatial index. 3H rho. I also get a 3 here from contracting delta ij with delta ij, and the a's cancel. This is 3hp. I still need to calculate the divergence of the stress energy tensor in the case where this free index is spatial. And so let me just say that that's 0. Either by a similar calculation or by symmetry, since the rotation invariance forbids a non-zero tensor with an odd number of spatial indices. So in summary, this parameterization of the stress energy tensor just defines the energy density and the pressure, but there's one consistency condition that always has to be satisfied. Which is, has a name, it's called the continuity equation. And it's like an equation of motion for BFRW energy density in terms of, you know, the expansion rate and the FRW pressure. So this generalizes the law of conservation of energy to an expanding universe where H is non-zero. You have a non-zero right-hand side, and the expansion of the universe is changing the energy density, usually by diluting it and giving you a lot. Okay. Well, that was so much fun. Calculating the Ricci curvature is even more fun, so I'll do that next. I'm going to start working out the left-hand side of Einstein's equation. I want to calculate the Einstein curvature. And I found it easiest to organize that calculation by calculating the Ricci curvature first. So as usual, there are really two calculations here, the calculation of R00 and the calculation of Rij. Where R0i has to be 0 by symmetry. So I'll just do R00 and then just quote the result for Rij. Put it over here because I'll need some space. In the first line, I'll just write out the general definition, the Ricci tensor. This is the definition of the Riemann curvature tensor with some of the indices. And then the next line, I'll just specialize to the case where both indices are our time. And I'll leave the contracted indices rho and sig as four indices. And in this next line, I'm just going to think about which terms are zero and which terms are non-zero. This term is zero since any Christoffel symbol with two zeros vanishes. This term is non-zero only in the case where both row indices are spatial. This term vanishes. This term is non-zero only in the case where all indices are spatial. Then now I'll plug in the F or W Christoffel symbols. Then I get some factors of three again from contracting indices. Three squared. Okay. And similarly, it occurred to me that I should put this and similar calculations on the problem set, because it's a good way to just practice GR if you haven't done GR calculations in a while. Okay. Now we've almost calculated the Ricci curvature. We've almost calculated the Einstein curvature. We just need to do this contraction and this subtraction. So let me just not go through the details of that and write down the Einstein curvature that you get. Zero, zero ends up being 3h squared. And Gij ends up being 'Kay. So now we would just set these to get Einstein's equations for the FRW metric. We would just set these equal to 8 pi g times the corresponding entries in the stress energy tensor. This is 8 pi g. 8 pi g rho and 8 pi g a squared p. Okay. And so those equations obtained by where you have h or a derivative on one side and stress energy on the other side, Einstein's equations specialized to the FRW metric are what are called Friedmann's equations. And they're usually written this way. So the first equation is the same. E dot over a squared equals g over. Just plugging in the definition of h and putting the 3 on the other side. And this is called the first Friedmann equation, or just the Friedmann equation. And then the second equation is usually written this way, which does need a little calculation to get from here to here. Or we'll put that on the problem set too. Okay. So we now have we've now derived three very interesting equations on an FRW background. The two Friedmann equations and the continuity equation. So I now want to interpret them a little bit. So one comment is that starting from the Friedmann equations, you can derive the continuity equation. And that is guaranteed to be true in GR. That's a general feature of GR. Since if I have Einstein's equation, I can take the divergence on both sides and conclude that I'll automatically get zero on the left-hand side, and conclude that stress energy is conserved on the right-hand side. Now, for these equations, it's also true that in the presence of the second Friedmann equation, I can, sorry, if given the continuity equation plus the first Friedmann equation, I can go the other way and get the second Friedmann equation. So the second Friedmann equation is sort of redundant. And I'll just take the equations of motion to be given by Friedmann 1 plus the continuity equation. Which are like an equation of motion for A and an equation of motion for rho. And to close the system of equations and fully determine the evolution, I need to know something about P. And that's not something that can be determined from GR alone. You need to know something about the microphysics and the contents of the universe. So I'm going to start by start talking about possibilities for P by considering sort of a simple toy model, a constant W model.
But even rho is not determined by GR, right?
Sorry.
Even the energy density is not, that's something external, right?
Not really. Yeah, I mean, the way that I was thinking about it, I suppose, is that if you had A and rho specified on some initial surface, and I want to evolve forward in time, then it would suffice to know P as a function of time. The only thing I would need to know about rho is its initial condition.
So if we start with the initial condition on rho, and you're saying that we don't need the form of rho for that?
Well, if you knew P, like let's say, for example, that P was equal to zero. That would be the case, for example, if the stress energy of the universe was dominated by non-relativistic particles. Then it would be enough to know A and rho at some initial time. And these equations that, you know, come from GR alone, plus the external, you know, knowledge that P is zero, would be enough to fully determine the evolution. That would correspond to the case of a matter dominated.
Okay.
I want to make a general definition, a pause for a general definition that I'll use in new context, which is that I'll introduce another function of T, which is the pressure over the energy density. And, this is what's called the equation of state of the universe. And I'm going to integrate these equations, the continuity equation and Friedmann's equation, in a special case where W is constant. So I'll call this a constant W model. So I'm going to raise this blackboard because the podium gets in the way, right? If the equation of state of the universe is constant, then by assumption, what that means is that the pressure is always W times rho, where W is constant in time. And, before I start integrating the equations, I just want to make the comment that this assumption is enough to close the system of equations and fully determine the evolution. And this is not such, even though it's kind of a toy model, it's already kind of physically interesting. Let me just make the comment But the cases where W equals 1/3, 0, and minus 1 correspond respectively to a universe where the stress energy is dominated by radiation. That is relativistic particles where velocity is close to 1. Matter, which is cosmologists speak for non-relativistic particles whose velocity is close to 0. And then finally, minus 1 turns out to be the case of a cosmological constant. Or a contribution to rho, the energy density, which is constant in time and does not dilute with the expansion of the universe. I'll justify these values of W shortly. Okay. To integrate the equations of motion in a constant W cosmology, I'm going to start with the continuity equation. R dot equals minus 3 A dot over A and plus W rho. To integrate this, I'll just rearrange it slightly to look like this. Then integrating both sides, I get log rho on this side. Log A here plus a constant. Or exponentiating rho grows as A to the minus 3 times 1 plus W. In the case where W equals 0, that's the matter-dominated universe, the energy density grows as goes as A to the minus 3, which makes sense physically. If I have a universe full of non-relativistic particles, then all that's changing as the universe expands is that the number of particles, the total energy is staying the same, the total number of particles and their rest mass is not changing, but the volume is going as A to the minus 3. In the case where W is 1/3, the energy density goes as A to the minus 4. And that also makes sense physically, since we found via the redshifting effect that relative to the matter-dominated case, the energy of each photon is going down by a factor of 1 over A. And then finally, in the case where W equals minus 1, the energy density is constant with the expansion of the universe. And that is the case of a cosmological constant, which just means by definition a contribution to the energy density, which is constant in time. Okay. Next, I'll integrate Friedmann's equation. This says that the expansion rate, the Hubble expansion rate, A dot over A, is proportional to the energy density 1/2, where I know the A behavior of rho from integrating the continuity equation. I could write this as G over 3 rho naught to the 1/2 is A to the minus 1 plus W 3 1. I've become a little bit hardwired to use like the astronomy parameterization, which is to write everything in terms of H naught. I'm gonna write it this way. This differential equation is straightforward to integrate, and I'll just write down the result. I get power law behavior in the case where W is greater than minus 1, and exponential behavior in the case where w is equal to minus 1. Did not do the case where w is less than minus 1, since I was only really interested in these two cases, but it's on the, it'll be on the problem set. In particular, in the case where of radiation domination, the scale factor goes as t to the 1/2, during matter domination as t to the 2/3, and during cosmological constant domination, exponential in t. And you'll remember those t dependences from a plot of a of t that I put on the board at the beginning of the last lecture. But at the time, I couldn't really explain where the different scalings were coming from. But you can see now where they that they come from Einstein's equation. Okay. Now I'll talk about, so that's a toy model, which is really not that different from, the expansion history of our universe. Every time I raise or lower this board, it sounds like a little more dubious than the last time. So, the expansion history of our universe, or the lambda CDM model, is just a situation where the stress energy is the sum of the three cases that I talked about before. So in our universe, at least as far as we can tell with current data, the energy density, our universe is described by the following stress energy density. The energy density consists of the sum of matter, radiation, and cosmological constant pieces. The pressure that would correspond to the stress energy density is just given by putting the appropriate W in front of each term. So there's a 1/3 on the radiation term, a 0 on the matter term, which I'll write for completeness, and then minus 1 on the cosmological constant term. The continuity equation is satisfied for the stress energy tensor, since the continuity equation is satisfied for the individual terms that I'm adding together, and the continuity equation is linear. So I can couple the stress energy tensor to Einstein's equation. And I get, so let's see. Before I do that, I just want to make like a qualitative comment. So I forgot to say this before, but you can see from these powers of A that at early times, when A is small, the radiation will dominate. And at late times, when A is large, the cosmological constant will dominate. And for the parameter values which arise in our universe, there's a long period in between where this middle term dominates. And so before I integrate the Friedman equation, you can see qualitatively that the evolution is going to divide into three phases where the universe is approximately constant W and has the scalings that I derived before. Okay, so I'm going to write down Einstein's equation. But first I want to tell you about some more astro notation. So when I teach like a GR-centric calculation on FRW cosmology, I just find it kind of natural to use this parameterization, where the expansion history is parameterized by these three parameters. Whereas the parameterization that's most often used in papers or talks is an astro parameterization, where the
M-O or M-D?
Oh, this is M-0 everywhere. Yeah, this means the matter density today. So the parameterization that you'll most often see uses four parameters, which I'll now define. So the parameter little h is specifying the Hubble expansion rate today in some weird units. So the units here are historical, and the way that H naught was originally defined was that it was the proportionality constant between the distances of nearby galaxies and their observed redshifts. In this parameterization, the observed value of H is around 0.7. Right, it is 0.7 plus or minus 0.03, which is sweeping a lot of controversy under the rug. You may know that there are currently like two camps of astronomers who want H to be something like 0.67, which is what you see in the CMB, or 0.73, which is what you may see if you look at nearby galaxies. Just to put some more reasonable units up, here's more recently. Okay, so that's one of the four parameters, and it's equivalent to specifying the energy density today. It's 3/8 pi g times h naught squared. And then the other three parameters, the capital omegas, are the just the fraction of each component today. So the energy density and component I today divided by the total energy density today. Let me make this equation rho tot comes here. Okay. Where I here is either radiation or matter or lambda. So the observed values of these parameters are roughly this for H. Omega matter is around 0.3. Omega lambda, 30% of the, or 31% of the energy density today is in matter, which means that the other 69% is in lambda. And the radiation abundance today is tiny. This is the total energy of the cosmic microwave background plus the cosmic neutrino background. But it is important at early times. Okay. So this is a redundant parameterization in the sense that the omegas have to add to one. So with that notation out of the way, and the Astro notation is like sort of optimized, if you want to think about it that way, for writing down H as a function of A. My Friedman equation, H is proportional to rho to the 1/2. This is what it looks like in these parameters.
This equation is just by reparameterizing.
Oh yeah, it's totally equivalent to like this expression for rho of A that I wrote above. It's the same model. Just saying that the sum of that the energy density of the universe is the sum of these three components with these scalings in A, just expressed in different variables. So in that notation, if I wanted to integrating Friedman's equation is no different conceptually from what I did before in the constant W model. One nice way of writing it, one general way of writing it is if I write Friedmann's equation like this, and then rearrange like this, then you can write t as this function of a. Nothing really conceptually new in this relative to the constant W model. The only difference is that that now this integral can't be done analytically, but it would be totally straightforward to put on the computer. One thing that you can appreciate right away is that quantities in cosmology like the age of the universe or the observable size of the universe on the past light cone are always going to be proportional to H naught. Times some integral, which is of order one, but the precise numerical values will depend on the values of, sorry, this should have been an omega r, but omega lambda twice. Will depend on the omegas of our universe. Well, that's 3:30, so this is a good place to stop. Are there any questions before we pick up next time?
So this is like computing. If we wanted to get that number of 13.7 billion years or something like that, what we would do is this integration is from 0 to a, which is today.
Oh, yes, exactly. From 0 to 1.
And then we put in the values of the omegas now are, yeah, all constants that are values today, right?
Yes, exactly. Okay. If there are no more questions, then I'll see you on Friday, right?